Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I am Jerry. With me today is Terry. Max is unable to join us. He's out. He's out and about, you know, doing his thing. I'm assuming he is in the middle of a dance floor right now, surrounded by people just pouring Jaeger into his mouth as he dances, probably to some disco version of Z Cars. Yeah, so I said Z Cars. Isn't that funny? That's how I learned, being an American, that's how I learned it before I heard someone say it. Z Cars. That's what I say. I say Z Cars. Feeling such a tool now every time I do it accidentally. And then and all the people listening are like, yeah, that's pretty bad, man. That's awful. It's a season review. We're going to be splitting it up into three separate segments. We're going to start off talking about Sylvan Bronze. How have they done? How are they doing? Then we'll move on talking about standout players and disappointments. And then we'll finish with matches that stood out. And that would be the end of the video. And then we'll move on to a pod-only segment in which Terry and I will be comparing our starting 11 to the Avengers. Which Avenger is Luca Dean? Okay? Which Avenger is Jordan Pickford? It's just the starting 11, though, because we have a pretty set starting 11 now. Okay? So, I think it'll be funny, and I think it's going to be really interesting if Terry, how many similarities we have, you know? And I do think there's an interesting discussion to be had when we figure out who the heck Nick Fury is. So, we'll figure that out. And people who don't know what Avengers are just like, I don't know what this shit is. But that's okay. It's okay. So, Terry, let's talk about Silva. How have you felt about Silva overall? I mean, you know, we've got a lot to discuss when we're talking about a manager, transfers they brought in, how he worked with the current squad, the people he shipped out, how were his big games against teams we should have won. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot to discuss when you're talking about manager. Where do you want to start?
I think this season we've learned a lot about Silva, like, throughout different parts of the season. I mean, you think of what he inherited, the club, the dressing room was just toxic. Like, there was no, you know, togetherness, no team spirit. That was evident on the pitch, like, last season across, you know, three different managers. There was players getting sent home from training. There was, you know, players who were asking on deadline day to go out on loan and, you know, whatnot, even the ones who didn't go. Silva seems to have done a really good job of sort of fostering a good, strong team spirit again, which is, it's so important. It's, people don't realise that if you've got a squad that are working for each other and fighting for each other and for the manager, it can make the difference in a lot of games. So I think he's done well in that regard. Style of play, it took a while, but he's definitely implemented his own style of play. I think it's based on a lot of, you know, wing play and a lot of little triangles between different players. And, you know, you can see the difference on, you know, the position of eighth might be the same, but if you look at, there was a graphic put up on Twitter where every single metric, you know, pass completion, attacks, you know, every single metric for a positive football had improved greatly. And that's what you want. You know, you can't work miracles by making, you know, slow players fast or weak players stronger, so, but he can implement a team sort of like formula, and I feel he's done that. The biggest thing that I've liked this season from Silva is how he faced down problems. Some things like how he arrested a slide in performance. That middle third of the season was awful. Like, we were the second from bottom in the form table for a long time. Then we had the 17-day break when he seemed to turn
right
it
there.
Yeah. After that 17-day break, you just saw a bit of a sea change with the players. Like, they started to, you know, the system started to work. The formula started to set in. And not just that, I think a big thing he did this season, Silva, was face down the problem at Goodison. He didn't come out and say the fans need to back us because it's hurting our performance. That's partway true that it was, but he didn't say it like that. He didn't then come out and just lay it all on his players and say, you need to make this crowd sing, you need to get this crowd off their feet. He faced down the problem and said, it's a bit of both. We need the fans to be with us and we'll play better when they are with us, but it's not all on them. You need to work with the crowd. And not only did that 17-day break help on the pitch, but after that, I think the next home game, I think it was, when we brought the siren in and stuff like that, you sort of start to see a real turnaround at Goodison. Like, the supporters started to get behind the team, even when we weren't playing, even when things weren't going well. I think it was a sort of coming together of the manager, players and supporters that the clubs needed for a while. I think Ronald Koeman tried to, you know, I think he felt it was there but didn't try and address it. I don't think Allardyce was any mind to address it. And that showed some real like stones for the manager. It showed some real bottle, because a lot of managers in his position coming off a really bad run and hadn't been at the club very long and hadn't been at any club very long, it was quite a risky thing to do, because if that doesn't come off, the fans turn on him. And it told me a lot about him, Silver Swart. I'm really pleased with Silver. There were some things I didn't like going out the cups early and stuff like that, and you know, the poor run in the middle of the season. But overall, I think, considering what he inherited and where he started, and the fact that he made changes when he needed to and he improved things that he needed to, I'm pretty pleased with Silver. He's definitely, I definitely think he's the right man at the minute.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to give him if this was like a class and I gave him, you know, an A being the best, B, C, D, whatever, I can't give him a straight up A because of that middle third. Can't do it, you know? But I'd give him a B because, honestly, because of what I saw after that 17-day layoff. To me, like, you saw all of a sudden the players start understanding zonal marking. That mean, and there were far less goals off of set plays, goals against off of set plays. We clearly were working on it. You saw a manager doing his job. You saw coaching. You know, you actually saw players getting concepts and being brought in. And it's almost like players started understanding roles. You know, you saw Calvert-Lewin plug in up at the head of that pressing system, and you saw him pressuring those passing lanes, and you could see him doing his job. Now, not scoring goals, but he's enabling other players to do their jobs. You know what I mean? I like the fact that you started seeing an adjustment on his part around who we have. To me, that's an intelligent manager, not trying to say, hey, let's take what we have and wedge it in like this. He has certain things he likes to do, but he's being flexible here or there. You know, some players I do not think were his ideal style of player. Like, I'm not completely sure that Idrissa Gueye fit what he wanted to do. You know what I mean? However, he's developed something that makes Idrissa Gueye just absolutely be essential to what we do. You know, he's using the strengths that we have to our advantage and making everything harmonious around them. You know, it's really intelligent football. The style has developed. It did take a while, but there is a style there now. You know, and you know what? I realize last season we finished in eighth, blah, blah, blah. Anybody who watches the football sees that it's different than last season. I don't hate myself at the end of this season to start off with. That was a good thing. But the way we approached games against the top six compared to the way we did it last year. You know? Last year, Allardyce goes to Arsenal and does five at the back, and there's certain players have no idea how to play that system. You know? And it's just an god-awful, depressing. And even though we lost to Arsenal earlier this season, it was still a better performance than that day. Still a better performance, and we didn't even have cohesion really yet. You know? But we're starting to see it now. And what's going to happen is he's going to start bringing in these pieces. And this is going to be like, I saw on Twitter, somebody said this is going to be the first time he's had a second season at a club since he was at, like, Estoril. That's a big, long gap of time for him. Just, I don't know. My imagination is doing somersaults right now, because it's like, imagine what the man can do because he did come back. Everybody was kind of like, at first they were like, I don't know now. We had that one bad break, one bad bounce, and all of a sudden we just are shit. And we felt like it. You know what I mean? It was, we were kind of like, you know what? We're still going to be patient, but this is just not boding well. Well, then again, we talked about how thin our squad was. It was thin. It was really thin for that moment, probably contributing to our results, but also players figuring out what the hell they're working with and Silva figuring out who the hell he's working with. You know, I'm really excited about what Marco Silva has brought, you know. And you know what? People can bring inflatable snakes all they want. Bring them on. You know, I'm fine with that. You know, I don't give a shit. I honestly, I've enjoyed the play this season. I love going up against a big team and just punching them right in the mouth and going, I don't care. I don't care what you have on your shirt. I don't care. You know, I love that. You know, because I grew up playing for those little teams, not the big teams. You know what I mean? And so, that's the types of teams I always pull for, the ones who are, you know, look the supposed big guys right in the eye and go, I am not intimidated. I'm going to get in your shit, okay? You know? And through that, you gradually, remember that you're one of the big guys. It's like you forgot for a little while, you know? So anyway, not a perfect season, right?
No, there was a lot to be improved on, but for a first season, considering what we had, not bad.
Yeah, totally. Agreed. Let's talk about Marcel Bronze. How do you feel about Marcel Bronze without pulling out any of your poetry? Because I feel like we've all written Marcel our own, you know, verse from the heart. Seriously, how do you feel about Marcel, though? You know,
I mean, pretty good. I mean, the proof's in the pudding with the, as far as one part of his job, the recruitment. He's made some really good acquisitions. He's boxed off our left-hand side for hopefully years to come with 18 million. £18 million for Luca Dean and Bernard on a free. It's like them two together, it's like to have one whole flank of your team sorted out for, God, less than, you know, Bournemouth play for Dominic Solanke, who's hardly done anything mm-hmm. for them. Like, when you think of the prices players go for now, to get two players of such quality on that mm-hmm. side for less than 20 million, that's just fun. It's just unbelievable. Like, you know, such, that's good transfer work. That's good homework done. None of the players who he's brought in have been disappointed with. Richarlison's been good. He's been our top scorer. Zouma's been a revelation. Like, he's now one of those players who we, you know, desperate to sign permanently. And he was only last second, wasn't he? He was actually signed after the transfer window was shut. So, quite a late in the day move. Yerry Mina, I mean, a lot of people are disappointed with him, but it's not really Marcel Brands' fault that he picks up injuries. And when he has played, I think he's done all right. He's had a couple of bad games. We've played 12, and I think he's been better in the ones that he's been better in more than he's been poor in. Andre Gomez, a baller. He's another one we need to sign. Like, not seeing as much of him as I'd like because he's been in and out of the team, but when he has played and he's been good, he's been a cut above. I asked the West Ham fans after the win away at West Ham what they thought of Andre Gomez. Like, their fans were coming out to their stadium saying, yeah, that guy just absolutely ran that game. He was a top six player. Of course, two of them are on loan. It's, you know, Marcel's got it all to do now to try and get them and, you know, do work some magic again, get another couple of Bernards and Dinias. But, you know, he's proved he's done it once. The other part of his job is the selling of players and getting rid of them, because the squad is and was massively bloated. And it was the first thing Silva and Brands together said in the press conference, that this is not right, this can't be left. There's so many senior players, they're all on, the majority of them are on huge wages, some of them aren't even contributing for that wage, and we need to do something, we need to get rid of them. Now, a lot of the players he moved out of the door were only temporarily moved out of the door. A lot of them were on loan. And now he's got it all to do this summer to try and move them on properly. Like, there's still... He got rid of... Who did he get rid of? He got rid of Rooney, Funes Mori, Davy Klaassen, possibly one more, I can't remember. Joel, I know his contract expired.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he got rid of some deadwood, and he needs to just carry on doing that. I mean, a lot of the players who went out on loan, I think the vast majority of them haven't done enough at those clubs to earn loans, so it's going to take some real skill to get them moves. But I think now he's probably got more of a chance with the, you know, the shorter contracts. They've all got one last year on the contracts with like some Morales and Cuco Martina and stuff like that. I think any club who wants to loan them are effectively buying them, because they're going to be the same with Ashley Williams this year. Their contract will run out, and then they'll just sign them, or they won't if they want them. So. Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with Marcel as well. It's harder to judge a director of football because you don't know what he does. You only really see tangibly what he does in the transfer windows. I think he was very brave, much as I praised Silva for being brave by facing down the crowd issue. I think Brands was very brave to not buckle in January and bring in a striker when things were going poorly. Everyone was saying, we need to buy a striker, we need to buy this, we need to buy that, we need to go and do business. And he said, he stuck to his guns. He said, this is not a market where there's any value. Everton should know that themselves, because we've very rarely made any, you know, long-term positive acquisitions in January. We typically only ever buy short-term fixes. And a lot of people wanted him to go out and get, say, Michy Batshuayi. And the pressure will have been immense to go and get him, but we would have had to have bought him, sorry, because of Chelsea's transfer. The Kurt Zouma loan, we would have had to buy him rather than loan him again, and that would have been ridiculous moving, you know, the wages, the money. He said no, he stuck to his guns, he rode the storm and said, I can understand the temptation, but it will not help long term. Look at last season, we're now trying to move on Tosin. He didn't say that, I'm sure, but look, you know, like, there's no value in this market, and he resisted it, and he said, we're doing all of our work for the summer, and hopefully by August we turn around and go, yeah, that was worthwhile, because look at the players we got. If we'd have brought in players in January, we might not have got this player or that player, and they're a lot better than they would have been.
Yeah, I think you look at a lot of these players that we had signed that were on way too high wages, just way, way too high, and the idea of being able to sell them and move them on is just really, really low likelihood. It just doesn't happen very often. I do think there's a possibility of us buying some players off, you know, some of the players that maybe don't have too much more on their contract, saying, here's some money, you want to go do your thing? I don't know. I don't really know why it couldn't happen, but
I don't think that will happen, just because clubs don't do that, because it tends to be, if they're gonna pay that money anyway, they might as well just have them around to, in case they need them, right? Like, or just try and get them their agents to get loan moves, so someone will pay some wages. And because if you're gonna pay, say Morales has got £2 million left on his contract or whatever it is in wages, rather than just pay that up front and let him go off, I just don't think it makes sense on the balance sheet to pay that when you could just pay it over a longer period and over a season. You've still got him if you need him, kind of thing. I think as supporters we want to do that to get rid of them and get them out the door, but I think the sort of money men would be like, don't do that.
I have a question about that, though. But if you could get them to accept less than the remainder of their contract is worth, then what they get out of it is total freedom to move wherever they want.
Like pennies on the dollar kind of thing.
Like basically you're kind of like, hey, I realize we'll owe you another $7 million over the span of this last year on your contract. We'll give you four, and you go right now, and you be a free agent right now. Go wherever you want.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Would a player go like that if they had the total freedom to go wherever? You know what I mean? I just don't know.
Depends
how much their freedom's worth to them.
Depends on the player. I think I think some older players whose careers are winding down probably wouldn't do that. They're going to go, I'm not going to get a good move anyway.
They want the money.
Want the money. Whereas someone like maybe Sandro Ramirez with his whole career in front of him, he might, he wouldn't be an option anyway because he's got too many years on his contract. But
oh my gosh, we are paying him so much.
I know. But to be honest, I can't, just quickly on that one, I can't even be angry at the club for that one. He looked the part. He looked like...
I was so excited about that guy. I just have so much... I read that one really wrong.
Everyone did. He was young. He was scoring goals. He was in a position we needed. He ticked all the boxes. The only mistake we made was we got played by his agent and paid him too much money because... I think his agent said, yeah, Atletico Madrid are in for him. And then we paid him lots and lots of money to not go to them when they probably were never in for him, because if they're in for him, there wouldn't have been an amount of money we could have paid to get him.
Well, I was under the impression another reason we did that, we paid him a lot, was because his release clause was so low. It was only like 5 million or something. It was so low. It's essentially getting a free.
Yeah.
And so you got to give that money, you know?
Yeah, functionally, you know, that 5 million could be in lieu of a, you know, signing bonus or something like that. So I can't even blame the club for that, but it's all for Brands to do now. This is where we'll really see Marcel Brands' mettle, because he's got to not only do what he did last season, bringing players in, he's also got to sell and sell and sell again and get rid of these players off the books and get the club healthy again financially. But it's been here a while now. He was rushed into things last summer. This summer he's had a whole year to get ready, and it's part of his project, and this is why we pay him the money.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what happens with players like Vlasic, Onyekuru, players that... You know, Onyekuru, I'm under the impression, wants to be here, but can he be here? And is it a situation where we'll cash in the way people are talking about with Munich? Vlasic has said he doesn't want to be here. I saw a rumor where he might be going to Galatasaray on loan. I don't know, man. Besic, I forgot about Mo Besic. You know, and I don't think Pulis is over at Middlesbrough anymore. So... Besic probably coming back, and he's like, I don't know where to go. So a lot of situations like that. And Ashley Williams, is he gone?
Yeah, he's gone. His contract,
oh,
last year of his contract was last season, so it'll just expire in June and it won't be renewed. We've got a lot of players like that in the last year of the contract this year, so I think that's why we'll probably see a lot of loans again for those players rather than a club buying them, and then it just won't be renewed. We've got like James McCarthy, things like that, and Morales is definitely like that, Martinez. Yeah. So this will probably be the last of them, but it just, there's still one or two like Balassi and like Sandro who are a little bit harder to shift because they've got big wages with no sort of tangible quality. Like the clubs they'd improve cannot afford those wages. Simple as that.
Oh, Balassi. Yeah, sorry, I tend to forget about Balassi. He's a player, another player I was sort of excited about just because of his tendency of certain games just to take over, be like, this is mine, I'm going to dominate right now, but he's usually against us.
Yeah. He was always, when he was at Crystal Palace, the player who scored against Liverpool, so as soon as he signed for Everton, that went out the window. I thought, well, maybe...
Oh, that was gone.
Yeah.
Bye-bye to that.
he missed one derby, and I think he played one, the FA Cup one. And he was, it didn't make any difference, frankly. But,
injury really took away a lot of his explosion.
Yeah.
It was all about that explosion.
I wasn't for him anyway. I've never really, especially for that price we got him at, it was ludicrous. But Ronald Koeman and Steve Walsh, everyone. Silver and Brands replaced, did a lot of damage in a short amount of time.
I always wonder what would have happened if Koeman had got Giroud when he wanted to get him. You know, I was always curious. I have no idea. I just feel like he would have been closer to what he wanted. He needed that big, you know, striker in the middle to be able to... Because that was our attack, is just literally launching balls to the middle, and to have him to be able to just one-touch them in. It's what, you know, Cenk Tosun essentially, except, you know, taller and better.
I don't think it would have made that much difference, because we still would have had no pace and we'd have still been a team of strangers. That was the problem. We bought so many players at the same time and put them all in. Like that first game against Stoke, when you think about it, like Klaassen, Sigurdsson, Rooney, Sandro all made their debut. I think Keane and Pickford, more than half the team were playing the first Premier League game together, and we won. Shows why Stoke went down, didn't it? But
yeah. Yeah. Pretty clearly. That's funny, the fact that all those players made their debut. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Just a lot of slower players that needed to be surrounded by faster players, really. You put them all on at once, though, and yeesh. Mm. It's like molasses. Ugh. All right. So, that is our Silva bronze review for the season. I'd say for the most part we're feeling pretty good. I think we're feeling like we're in good hands, you know, which is cool. All right, so we'll move on to standout players and disappointments, ? Right after this break. Here's a catchy tune. And we're back. Hope you enjoyed that catchy tune. Yeah, it was super catchy. I don't know what it was. All right, so... I may just edit in something nothing catchy at all. Like the least catchy tune ever. Just to make myself seem an idiot. I don't have to work hard at that. All right, so... standout players... and disappointments. I've got a list I've written down, but I always let other people go first because I don't want to be rude, really. Be like, hey, I'm directing questions, but no, let me go first. That just sounds like dick move, you know? So, Terry, throw me in your view, a standout player this season. It could be maybe a pleasant surprise, if you will.
So you want to be surprised, or you want me to go for the obvious one, surprised?
You know what? I'll tell you what. Why don't, go where you want to go, you know? Hey, the world is your oyster, my friend.
No, I'm going to go with a surprise. I'm going to go with not Luca Dean. I'm going to go with Michael Keane.
Ah, Michael Keane. I've heard of him. Why?
I think he's a good comeback story. I mean, last season he went from at the beginning of the season, you know, we had a new player and he was an England international and he, you know, was very highly thought of. And then last season was just a disaster for him. He struggled throughout the season. He had a recurring injury on his foot, and you know, he was a victim of poor managers over him, bad style, rotating, you know, cast of partners next to him. Mm-hmm. A lot of people had flagged him up as one of the biggest disappointments of last season, and now to come into the end of this season and he's been one of the standout players. He's just turned it around. He's been an absolute rock at the back. There's been times where he's not been perfect, you know, he's made mistakes and all that, but overall, like most of the time, he's been super strong. He's been the player that we bought. He does tend to excel in against the bigger teams, I find, you know, when he's playing against the really good players, when he's, you know, having to defend like a lion, he's having to, like, you know, throw himself in front of the ball and he's having to win, you know, his battles. It's the only games he seems to not perform as well in is when it's, yeah, Everton, you just have the ball. You just have all of the ball and then we, you know, see what we can do. That tends to be when he, you know, he struggles a little bit, because maybe it's a concentration thing, I don't know, but he is up there for the most improved player this season. He's, you know, he was easily on a lot of people's get rid list last summer, and now I don't think he's anywhere near anyone's. He's one of the key players in the team, and it goes to show, of the three senior centre backs, you know, not including Jagielka, three first choice centre backs we've had this season, how often has he not been involved in the combination? It's always been Keane and Zuma, or Keane and Mina, and then it's once we had Zouma and Mina, and then it went straight back to Keane because he was the linchpin at the back. He was the stability. So he's one of my standouts for this season.
Yeah, I think he led the team in aerial duels and clearances, which kind of plugs into, you know, he was brought in by who? Mr. Moneyball. Mm. All right. Steve Walsh Moneyball. All right. That was one of the reasons why, you know, he was sitting there. He was all about stats. So it doesn't surprise me that Keane is great at clearances and aerial duels. It doesn't surprise me in the least. He was the most consistent performer in the back when it comes to center backs. However, he did get to play more than the others, which might explain his numbers being more inflated than theirs, if I'm going to be fair. I think he is a more intelligent passer than he's given credit for by a lot of people. I do think sometimes it takes him a while to turn. There's a little bit of a quickness thing with him, whatever. Good surprise, though. I agree with you completely. That is a very good surprise to start off with, because I didn't see that coming at the beginning of the season. Did not.
Don't think anyone did. I mean, I had faith that he would be better than we'd seen, but he's really turned it on, and let's not forget that his last-ditch tackle against Mo Salah in the Goodison Derby pretty much saved football for the season and stopped winning the league.
Like, you're welcome, world.
Thank you, Michael Keane.
Oh, it was beautiful. So Michael Keane, that's a good one. Can I just say that I was, as far as every one of our signings, except for, I can't say Mina is is a surprise or a standout player yet. I think he'll get there. He was maybe the signing I was most excited about. But I can't really. However, every one of the other signings has adapted well, has looked strong, and so instead of naming them individually and having a separate discussion, it was just an impressive showing from that group.
Yeah.
And if Mina doesn't get injured as much as he was this season, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Zouma, obviously a rock in the back, gave us more speed in the back, which was nice to have, more speed and quickness from the center backs. Gomez is a damn general, all right? And you know, beard club for men representative, which is nice. Bernard, who, you know, is one of the more fun players to watch. He gave us one of those people who can weave in and out on the back and actually take somebody on the inline. You know, I don't see him as an enormous goal threat. I just don't. I do feel like he's a creator. He creates chances, and that right there, something we needed desperately. Consistency. His interplay with Luka Dean on the flank is just...
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. And Luka Dean, all right, who had, I feel like, one of the biggest tasks of anyone, filling Leighton Baines' shoes. All right, I mean, the guy is great in the air. He's a fantastic defender. He's an intelligent combination player. He's not one of those players who weaves in and out like with on the dribble, but he just passes moves and he just combines well with other players. He's exactly as advertised. Exactly. When I watched tons of video of him, when I heard we might be signing him, he's exactly what I expected. It was so nice. So I guess the surprise is it translated.
Mm.
You know, and the other thing I didn't realize is how good his service is. It is pinpoint accuracy. So good. All right. And I didn't know he could do that. Those dead balls outside the box in terms of bending that. Oh my God! I didn't know that was a thing that he could do. So, So that's my cheating answer. Is for those for surprises or standout players. I'm just saying the signings for the most part, excepting Yerry Mina, who will be fine. Right there, all of them are great. all of them stood out, every single one of them. I mean, Luka Dean got Player of the Year.
Yeah.
You know, brand new. That's crazy.
Yeah. Said in the previous video about, testament to brands, every single player we brought in was great. Like, varying levels of great, but none of them were poor. Like, it's just... And, frankly, I just think that, like, the money that was spent was finally well spent after under Walsh and whatnot. Even the better players we bought, you know, we overpaid for a lot of them, but all the new players we brought in, you know, like Luka Dean and Bernard and all that, these players, if we were to sell them now, would cost huge amounts of money because they've been so good. Mm-hmm. How much would it take to get Luka Dean now? Like, a crazy amount of money.
Somebody I didn't even mention was Richarlison, who led, you know, joint leader in scoring. Mm-hmm. I didn't even mention him. And the fact that he started on one side, moved to the center, moved to the right, he adapted, adjusted, stopped flopping all over like a friggin' land-bound salmon. You know, I was glad that finally he decided to toughen up and start playing a little more, actually playing instead of just, you know, falling. He's done well. He's done very well. And you know what? We have a Brazilian national on our team who has a cool little celebration dance and does lots of videos with Neymar and shit. That's a little personal geek out I like.
Yeah, massive amounts of pressure that he's had to shoulder as well, because the British media, sports media, were desperate for him to fail because he was such a big price tag, and he'd left Watford and gone to Everton with Marco Silva, and they didn't like Silva for that anyway. I don't know. I feel like the press were all quite up for him flopping at Everton, and he hasn't done it. He's performed, and I think they've got to praise him through gritted teeth now.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also want to add, for a good surprise, the number of clean sheets that Pickford presented us with, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Good surprise. And then for a disappointment, a couple of games where emotionally or concentration-wise, I mean, he had four errors leading to goals this season, all right? So the good with the bad with Pickford. He's young,
well, you've read my mind, because he was going to be my pick for a disappointment.
Hmm.
I mean, are we doing the disappointments now, or
we can mix them up, man? This is like Thunderdome, man. There's no rules. It's all right.
Yeah. I mean, no. I'll wait. I'll do.
It's okay. It's okay. I brought him up. I brought him up in this. So I think there is a surprise in that he did present us with some solid performances and give us some clean sheets, which part of that is due to him, but a big portion of that is due to defensive, formation and style really starting to take over,
Yeah, I mean,
so I want to give it joint credit on that. So you were going to go disappointment, and I agree with that too, the fact that he sort of individually lost us some points this season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the summary, Addy, in the World Cup, he had a massive, massive moment a few massive, massive moments, really. The big save against Colombia, the penalty shootout win, he should have gone into this season really and became the star at Everton. He was, lined up. Everything was in place for him to become Everton's star, the England keeper, the sort of hero of that World Cup run that got the whole country up. And this season, he's just his worst traits have been more prominent than his good traits. He's cost us points. Mm-hmm. You touched on it then. I can think of two off the top of my head. We should have drew against Liverpool at Anfield, but for the mistake there, the mistake against, the multiple mistakes against Newcastle, we should have won that game. We should have drawn against Liverpool. We lost both. That's 4 points. If we get another 4 points, we're in Europe. Not as simple as that, because there's other games that other players have cost us, but it's ridiculous. Like, there's the point the goal, one of the goals, the key goal, I know they scored a lot of goals, but the key goal against Tottenham at home was Pickford's mistake when he's running out between him and Zouma. Now Pickford can see the player, Zouma can't. That's on Pickford to deal with. Zouma can't see the man behind him, Pickford can. There's been times this season where he's been a liability, Pickford. He's been, you know, consistent a lot through the season. It's like, you're meant to be the star Everton man. You're, you know, the big profile, you know, England number one. You should be adding points to our season, not taking them away. A top keeper, which Pickford is and has the potential to be, a top keeper earns you 10 points in a season. He doesn't cost you like multiple points, especially when we're on the, you know, precipice of, you know, sort of on the borderline for European place and stuff like that. If you're going to finish 10th or 11th, like Watford did, it's not a big deal. But if you're trying to achieve things, then you need to be better than that. Pickford is a big player with a big ego, and I like that. But he needs to back it up and learn when to, you know, bring his arrogance out and when to get his head down. And that's something he's had to learn this season. And I hope he takes into next season. So he's been my big disappointment, if I'm honest, for this season. Pickford could have been the man this season, and he's not lived up to it.
Yeah, I think he went into the season overconfident based on the World Cup, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you go into it, you go into a season like that, I don't know. Sometimes you go like that, it prevents you from really gelling with the rest of the team. You know, you go in, you almost, you know, Billy Big Britches, you know, I have no evidence that he's like that at all. It's just something that, you know, I could see that, you know, and his performance at Newcastle, it's just one of those things where this is where we're at as a club, though. All right, we are purchasing and bringing in young game changers. All right, they're young, they have immense potential, and they're going to do a lot of amazing things. But Newcastles are going to happen, you know. There's going to be slip ups. There's going to be inconsistencies because they're still young, you know. And that's where we're at as a club right now. Because us buying polished, finished articles is really hard to do, you know. Because a lot of those polished, finished articles want Champions League, you know. And that allows Dortmund to get these really amazing players for like not much money, because people are like, yeah, I'll go there. I can play a little Champions League, and, you know, yeah, I'll play for you. Yeah. Torgan Hazard, you know, a little bit of change. You know what I mean? They did not pay much for him. It's ridiculous what they paid for him. All right? So, but that's just where we're at right now, though, because English clubs, number one, English clubs, the prices are inflated for us because of Sky money, because of the TV money. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. All the prices are hyperinflated. You know, when I think about how much Huddersfield made last season compared to what Valencia made last season, Valencia made less than Huddersfield. All right? Big difference in quality there. But that's just the way it is. So everyone's going to boost their prices for Premier League teams. But the Champions League players, you know, they want to go to Champions League clubs, and that's the way it is. So we're going to have these players that are going to make these immature mistakes. There's going to be immaturity. It's going to be there. Or players that maybe haven't played for a while, like a Gomez. You know, we bring in a Cadillac type player who's going to have some injury concerns. You know, Mina didn't even play very much for Barcelona the season before. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a very good reason why he had injury problems. You know? So it's just the way it is. So Pickford, there was good and bad.
Yeah,
right?
Oh yeah.
Tremendous save against, was it Salah in the derby, the Goodison derby? Yeah. Another big, him and Keane, you know, you're welcome, world. Just saying. It was nice. That was the one that Max preferred, his save, actually. Yeah.
I think I preferred it, to be honest, considering the amount of stick he got for the first one. I mean, stick off us is one thing, but
That is a very fair reason, too.
Stick off the difference. Like, shame about those little arms in it that stopped you winning the title at Goodison Park.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. It's fine. I'm going to go ahead and say a disappointment for me this season, because I was expecting a lot bigger things from him. And I'm a, I, as a person seems like a good guy. Jink Tosun. Jink Tosun was a player, came into the season. I actually thought he had a pretty solid game against Wolves, you know, combined well. I think he got an assist. I feel like he got the second assist, you know, to Richarlison. And it's just a shame as the realization hit me that he's just better in a two, you know, and teams running a 4-4-2, having an additional striker to help out, or someone playing immediately behind, you know, as a second striker, you know, just giving him support, because he just does not seem to fit what Silva's trying to do. And that's a shame, because I do think he's a quality striker for someone. It's just a shame it's not us. It doesn't seem like it's going to be us, you know? So I was a little disappointed with that. Not with his personality at all. He seems great.
No, I agree. I came into this season thinking he was going to kick on and be the central player in amongst that front three, and it just doesn't seem to work. I mean, I think the league sort of doesn't suit him. He's not fast enough or strong enough. He can't bully players or outpace them. I think finishing-wise, he's brilliant. I think, you know, give him a chance in the box, he finishes it, but it's just players, he struggles to get away from players, he struggles to dominate players physically, just doesn't seem to suit him, the league. But as an actual footballer, I think he's a good player. I think he's got an eye for goal, but we just don't play the style that suits him or in a league that suits him. But for me,
I would agree with that. I think the league is a big issue for him. You watch him trying to, you know, on one of our goal kicks, Pickford's goal kicks, watching him trying to body off center backs who are, let's be frank, I feel like Premier League has the biggest center backs in the world, all right? Tosun, who's like 6 feet tall, I think, not super tall for a striker, all right? He's trying to, like, push them off. He does not win aerial duels in those circumstances. DCL does, okay? Giving us additional chances to win possession. Typically, Tosun loses those aerial duels and it goes straight back to the other team after they win them. All right, that's something that is an issue for him. All right, I don't think his touch is brilliant either. There are times where it does bounce far off. I do think he's a good player who does combine well. He gets his head up. He's an unselfish player, and he is capable of a highlight. You know. I think he's going to go somewhere and become a really solid striker. I just don't think he's going to be with us next season. It's just not what Silva wants, it seems like, you know? So if we're going to have a bigger player, it seems like it needs to be someone who's both taller and stronger. You know, it's a shame. I was getting excited about Tosun Pasha. Oh, well. Can I just mention a positive that came out, you mentioned as a possible most improved player. Can I mention DCL being able to fill the striker role the way he has? Not scoring goals, but DCL's pressing work, combination play, hold-up play. He's doing everything except scoring, and I just want to say that's the fact that he's matured as a team player. That was surprising to me, and I was happy with that.
Yeah, I'm super pleased with him. He was my pick for most improved player in the video we did on that. Even over Michael Keane, just he's come such a long way. I never used to be a fan of him. I used to not see what Koeman saw in him. I was like, why does he play? Like, it just doesn't do anything. I just didn't see it, and I was wrong. I do see it now. He's the prototype for what we want as a striker. If he scored regular goals, oh, he'd be a £100 million player. Physically, he's got everything. He's fast, he's strong, he works hard, he presses, he takes instruction. He just lacks that killer instinct. He misses chances. And if he can add that to his game, forget it. He could go as far as he wants. He would be brilliant. He is still very young, though. I've been very pleased with him, though, very surprised. I wish he was as good as he is now last season when we had no other option but him. And I thought that was really unfair on him at the time. He wasn't ready to be thrust into that spot, and we had to do it. And now I think he'd be ready, because it's, you know, he's come on and he's been a really, you know, one of the key players in these games against the top six, so we're starting to get results again. Take Calvert-Lewin out to any of those games, I don't think we win as many of them. I think some of them we lose, because he's just so important.
I agree. We'll talk more about. I have some things about Calvert-Lewin I want to say when we get to our podcast segment about the starting 11 as Avengers. So we'll get there on that. That's for you people watching the video. You'll have to pop over to the pod for the bit of geekery. And if you hate geek stuff, then you don't need to go. Don't listen to it. Anyway, yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the last bit of my, you know, I do have some disappointment related to Mina being injured. But you know, he can't help that. Oh, well. You know what I mean? So that's about it, though. Anything else you got, Terry?
No. It's been a good season. Good's about it. I wouldn't go too overboard. But I think I just can't. I'm not so far removed from what we were like last summer. I think I'd have took this all day and twice on Sunday all week. Mm-hmm. When we were last summer, when the joy was sucked out of supporting the club, you know, we've come a long way since then. It's just time to build on that now and you know get the rest of our team in place, because I want to get back into Europe. I want to start trying to win cups again, and I think we're back on the way forward. We've floundered for a couple of years, but I've got faith now that things can be improved and are being improved.
Don't wrap it up yet. We still got to talk about standout matches. All right? I was like, hold on. Don't do your big summary just yet.
No, I'm just
it's just me, and I'm quite.
Nah, man, it's good.
So, we're going to move on to the next segment, though. Talk about matches that stood out for good reason and bad reasons. So we'll be right back. And we're back. After that delicious melody that was dropped to us by... hope you enjoyed it. It really says a lot about my views on life, my philosophy, my approach to the universe. I hope that was really a good song. So, matches that stood out to us. For low points, I gotta be honest, I had no problem just listing a shit ton of low points. Certain results that were just really not great. However, once I started really looking at the results list, I started remembering some happy feelings. So I've got equal amount of low points and high points, I think. So, Terry, you want to start with a low point or a high point in terms of matches that stood out? And you're probably going to be saying a lot of the stuff that I...
Yeah, I mean...
So there's going to be some overlap.
I think I've got two of each. So I'll start with one low point, and it's quite an obvious one. It's the Anfield Derby.
Okay. I wrote that down. It sucked the ass. What's your next one? let us never speak of it again.
Next one is... do you want me to say the next one or actually talk about the...
Yeah. That's up to you. I didn't even... I was just like, Anfield Derby, let's go. No, it's really up to you. If you have something you want to say about it, go ahead.
Yeah, in short, we played well. It was bullshit that we lost. They were so lucky. It was individual error, and they acted like they'd won the World Cup and then pretended that we act like we win the World Cup if we beat them. So
that's right.
I'm really glad that we could stop them from winning the league at Goodison Park.
That's right.
Yeah, the next one, the next negative.
I'm done with everything you said. I have nothing to add. Go to your next one.
Millwall in the Cup.
I wrote that one down too.
Those two games were probably the two lowest in the points in the season. The fact that an FA Cup run can, you know, turn a faltering season around, and at that point in whenever it was, I think it was January, we'd had a pretty ropey December. You know, the wheels had started to come off the early season optimism, and a lower league team should have been an opportunity to A, you know, get a much needed victory, and B, you know, get some momentum going in the Copa Cup. We all want to win. And it was just awful. Like, we went down there and, you know, there was trouble with supporters and the, you know, we, as bad as we were, we conceded a, you know, excuse the language, bullshit, you know, their goal at the very end, with players being offside, and it was just such a drab. You know, at that time, it felt like, oh my God, it's January and we've got nothing left to play for in the season, and it's terrible.
It wasn't one of their goals with their hand.
Something like that. I don't know whether it was offside or what.
One of their goals went off the player's hand. He knocked it in like he's playing volleyball. All right.
I mean, we want.
And had there been VAR, would not have counted. But it's only there for certain teams in certain stadiums.
But the thing about that was, at that time, even if we'd have won, we'd have gone to the next game, and I didn't have much confidence we'd have got through, no matter who we played against, because we were so poor at the time. And
it was a weak time, you're right.
It's the biggest black mark on Silva's season, is the poor performance in the Cups, and I would expect next season, considering the steep learning curve that it was for him, that we'll start to see some stronger teams in the Cups, because I think he realises, if he wins a cup here, then he's got credit for a long, long time. He's going to, you know, be seen as a hero, because it's something that the club needs to address, need to get that monkey off our back. We've been good enough several times to win a cup, and we always seem to just beat ourselves like this. Like, you know, to go out to Southampton and to Millwall, it's just real low points, real, you know, kicking the guts at a time when... Yeah. Things were going poorly anyway, so they're my two lowest points anyway. The two that had the biggest impact on supporters on the season, I think.
Okay, it's really difficult to like debate those. They are two that are on my list, definitely. I wrote a bunch more down though, just because I dwell in pain. it's where I live. I live in a very painful place. I have to mention the 1-1 penalties lost to Southampton in the other cup, just because I didn't get to watch it. I was having to listen to it on Everton radio as I was getting to my oldest son's practice, and I put it over like the you know, I put it in the car, and me and my son were listening to it, and it was just, well, it's just crap, right? I mean, to lose like that to Southampton at Goodison, right? It's just another bad cup loss that's, you know, put it on the pile for Everton in recent memory. It's just shit. I need to additionally mention our latest loss, 2-0 to Fulham, which basically put us out of European contention.
Yeah.
Just a weak day. I have to, because it was a time where there was optimism. We're feeling good.
We were playing really well, and Fulham were already relegated. It was just a baffling defeat, and it was so, you know, important considering the European race at the time. I think we were in, you know, the box seat at that point, and yeah, that was one of the poor ones. I can't argue with that one.
Yeah, and additionally, I'm just gonna have to say the loss at Newcastle, 3-2, having a 2-0 lead, and then to collapse like that. was really disheartening. Again, it was in the middle of a good run of form. That's why I guess those two losses in particular really ate at me, because it wasn't in the middle of a lull where we were all of our, you know, it wasn't expected. These are moments where we were doing all right. You know, we were playing pretty well. Fulham was just overall just a big meh. You know, the whole day was meh. But Newcastle, we earned that 2-0 lead. We looked good. And then it was just, let's lay down, and Pickford just collapses, just has an emotional issue at Newcastle. So those are the ones that really, you know, on top of the ones that you mentioned, those are the ones that hurt. So let's put it that way. So now that we've gotten, you know, the bad juju out of the way, all the negativity, cleanse it in through the nose, out through the mouth. Very good. Expel. Let's talk about the good stuff. All right. Terry, can you give me a high point?
I'll go for an easy one. I'll go for the 4-0 win at home over Man United. Just a great game from start to finish. They were absolutely awful, and that was all there was to it. They were awful, if you believe any of the media over here. Everton didn't even play well, according to them. Mm. But no, we played fantastic. We absolutely dominated them, and I don't care how poor Man United go, it's always great to, you know, to turn up and perform like that against them. The goals were great. Like, we had overhead kick from Richarlison, we had a long distance strike from Dean, a long distance strike from Sigurdsson, a rare goal from Walcott. It just felt great to not only it feels great to beat Man United any time, just because of the years of like domination they've had and like the results they've dished out to us, but to beat them like that, to truly, like, you know, humiliate them, it was like if it was a boxer in the ring, we were starting to, like, you know, put one hand behind our back at one point and just really, really, you know, humiliate them. And it feels good. I love it. I hope we can do that more and more, because it looks as though, I mean, off the pitch, the gap is gargantuan, but on the pitch, it looks like they're the one we need to try and catch. They're not really in any great shakes at the minute, and they seem to be the weakest sort of link in the top six. So hopefully they carry on being like this, and we can you know, rein them in. But they didn't look like there was much of a difference. It didn't look like they were better than us, rather, in that game, because we were great.
Yeah, we looked really good. We were just continuing that period of strong play, which I thought. One of the moments that started that period of strong play was in the second half against Chelsea. We were, you know, 0-0 at halftime, and we came out and something clicked. And all of a sudden, we were all over their asses. Yeah. It was fantastic. Won that one 2-0. It was a great performance, and I felt like that was a serious tone setter. Now, I do think the play after the 17-day layoff, we talked about it before, that 17-day layoff, we came back and beat Cardiff 3-0. All right, that was solid, but I think we all thought it might have been a false dawn because it was against Cardiff, and you never know which Cardiff's going to show up. So we thought, it's Cardiff, and they're probably going to get relegated. Let's just hold our, you know, let's just not go out buying shots just yet. But I will say that was I don't want to put that at the top of all those other games, because I feel like a 1-0 win over Arsenal is more impressive than a 3-0 win over Cardiff. However, I will also mention that 2-0 win at West Ham, we outshot them 17-3. They had one shot on goal. One. And I don't even think Arsenal mustered many shots on goal against us either. It was just a run, and it all the big like holy crap dominant play started that second half against Chelsea. You know, so there's a long list of I do have a long list of some positive vibes after some of these were draws. You know, I didn't hate our 0-0 draw against Chelsea. I didn't hate it.
No.
Didn't hate it. To me, it was like, hey, it was a non-loss against one of the big six, and we came out there to play, and we didn't have to deal with like a stupid Martial, you know, flopping to give United the win, or Arsenal getting offsides goals. You know what I mean? It was like the bad luck was gone. We had some chances, and we held them at Stamford Bridge. That was a cool moment. I hate saying a draw is one of your high points, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't my highest point of the season. Uh-huh. But still, it was a note of possible progression.
The home derby was a high point. It was a draw, and you go, oh, celebrating a draw. It's like, no, but it's what it represented. Like, it was a turning point for the crowds at Goodison Park. The atmosphere had been awful for a long time, and in that game, I think it was the first game we had the siren, and, you know, the originals had started to, you know, have an effect, with flags and stuff. And I was like, this is the way it should be, this is the way it was, and it's gone away for so long, and look at the difference it makes. Like, Liverpool, make no mistake, were an absolutely unbelievable team last season, and we matched them blow for blow in that game, and you know, ultimately, in their last 10 games, and Man City's last 10 games, Man City won 10, they won 9 and drew 1. Guess where they drew?
Mm-hmm.
It made the difference. And that's an added bonus. The fact that we went against this team who, frankly, are one of the best teams in Europe. And we got the result that we should have got in the home derby as well. There was no luck for them this time. There was no fluke, freak mistake from our keeper. Felt good. I felt like we put that previous result to bed that game. Just say only a draw kind of is a highlight of the season, but draws can, you know, depending on context, draws can be important. And that draw saved football for another year.
Yeah. And I continue to maintain that the more opportunities you get, the luckier you're going to be. You know what I mean? You give yourself opportunities to be lucky. So we just had a lot more, we were getting a lot more shots as the season wore on. You know, that last third of the season, we were getting more chances than the teams we were playing. So we were getting more of the luck. You know, it wasn't as much of these ridiculous, you know, I mean, the first part of the season it was ludicrous how many things were going against us. You know, but it evened out. It did, and I think a big part of this was we just focused on ourselves. You know, be like, you know what? It's going to go bad sometimes, whatever. Let's just focus on getting more chances for us. You know? You get more opportunities as a squad. You just have to, the luck has to increase. It has to. There's no, I mean, yeah. Because luck. What is luck? Ah, luck. It's in the ether. It's an abstract. All right. Anything else about matches that stood out, man?
No. There was a lot of good games, Leicester away, but like I think we touched on the really big ones.
Who was our very first friendly with during last summer?
ATV Arding or something like that.
Is it Erdning or something?
Something like that. It was 22-0 and we'd used up all of our goals from pre-season because I don't think we were very good after that.
No.
Doesn't matter. I tell people every pre-season and everyone freaks out anyway. Go, doesn't matter. They can lose every game in pre-season. It's all about fitness as long as they win their first game of real football.
I mean, that was the one thing. I remember I found a way to watch that online, and I was like, I don't know what to take from this. I was watching it with my kids, and they were just jumping like every 5 minutes, going, "Yeah!" You know, because there were so many goals. You know, kids when they're really little, like Bennett's 6, so he's almost 7, so he's just getting to the point where he can watch a longer stretch of game that doesn't have a goal in it, and actually start appreciating the play. You know, but for a while there, it was like it was all about whether or not a game had a goal in it. You know, if a goal happened, that's when he was paying attention, you know? And so that game was the best game ever. The most entertaining game. If you're the kind of person who doesn't appreciate, like, fair play, you know? that was just, oh, man, I my heart went out to old Erdning, you know what I mean? But we've heard of them now, and globally they are more of a brand now, just saying, so maybe the marketing helped. God, that's the worst bright side of the pillow I've had. So yeah, instead of the bright side of the cloud, fluffy side of the pillow, yeah, merge them. Hybrid phrase. Yeah. All right, anyway, I just wanted to mention that game just because it was kind of one of the first impressions we had of the season, and I'd forgotten about it until just now. Anyway, all right, well, that's it for our season review then, all right? No European place this season, so obviously there is a little bit of a disappointment. However, higher stats pretty much all over the place than last season. Better sense of optimism. We don't hate ourselves when we watch our team play now. These are good things. Overall, you mentioned it in the Silva when we were talking about Silva earlier. Just the overall vibe with everybody. There's a sense of excitement, you know, and we're not sitting there like stewing like, oh God, when are they getting rid of him? You know, it's good times, and we're excited about the summer and excited about what's coming. You know, I feel like we're in good hands right now, most of us anyway.
Yeah.
So good things. All right. So that's it for our season review. And we're going to talk about the starting 11 if they were Avengers. If you don't go in for that kind of geeky shit, apologies. We that's who we are. We can't change it. All right. Love us for us. So what we have going on with this segment is for the geeks. So if you're not a geek, you probably want to go, I don't know, go do shots of Jaeger or something, whatever non-geeks do. I wouldn't know. What we're doing is we are taking the starting 11. We, you know, Everton has a pretty accepted starting 11 at this point. The 11 strongest players at their positions, and we are comparing them to Avengers, because all the kids right now dig the Avengers movies. Endgame is out. I haven't seen it yet. No spoilers. Spoilers, sweetie. That's what's going to happen, all right? So we'll start with Terry, just because we always do that. I think we could end up having some similarities, a lot of similarities.
I'm going to say early doors that we're probably not going to have a lot of overlap. I don't predict we will.
No, is that right? Okay, I guess we'll see. I don't know. So, Terry, if you want to go ahead and start us off, wherever you want to go, let's hear who the Everton Avengers are.
I'm going to go with Luca Dean as Spider-Man.
Ah, Luca Dean as Spider-Man. I did not see that coming. All right, why? Why is Luca Dean Spider-Man?
Because Luca Dean and Spider-Man are both the fresh-faced new additions to the team. They're really well-liked. They're really important, but they don't realize how important they are to the team. And they are a big part of the future of the team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about it like that, but it definitely makes a lot of sense. So how should we proceed on this, Terry? Should I give a corresponding Avenger for Luca Dean, or a corresponding player to Spider-Man?
I do the equivalent superhero. So who have you got Spider-Man as?
All right, okay. So I've got my Spider-Man, for the exact same reasons you just gave for Luca Dean, is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. DCL is my Spider-Man. Young, doesn't always accomplish the objective that he wants to accomplish. Is not always one of the main spearheads of the attack, however, one of the things he does is doing his job allows other people to do their jobs. And I think that's one of the things Spider-Man does really well. Also, DCL, like Spider-Man, tends to disappear at times. So, Terry, you wanna go ahead and move on?
I think I've got two that will cross over with you, so I'm going to do them two next.
Okay.
Captain America is Seamus Coleman.
Yeah, I do have that as well. I do. Yeah. I didn't even think about it. It was really quick.
The leaders, the inspiration of the team, the one they all look to on the field. And sometimes they struggle because they're not as powerful as some as the opposition, or they, you know, need some of the bigger hitters to come and help them. But overall, they're the captain of the team, the focal point of the team, and they're both the oldest.
and for the exact same reasons, you know, a leader. Rules with his heart and his instinct, you know, just kind of makes sense. Additionally, I would add one other thing that, you know, Seamus doing his Forrest Gump down the sideline, as Max likes to say. He always does the Forrest Gump line with Seamus. Seamus running down the sideline with reckless abandon just completely reminds me of Cap, like going into a fight, just not even thinking about it, just going and just, you know, just mindlessly running through there. I'd say that I am so with you on that. So, what's your other one where we've got some overlap, probably?
Thor is Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah, I had to go Gylfi with Thor. Yeah.
The big hitter, the one they turn to when they need strength, has a major impact on damaging the opposition, and let's just get it out the way. His middle name, Gylfi Sigurdsson, is Thor. How could you not?
Yeah, I've got that as well. Pretty much had to do that one.
Yeah.
And his shots, his just like long range, just thumping shots from distance. Immediately the first thing I think of is a thunderbolt every time. And so Thor dishing out thunderbolts. Yeah, it's hard not to go with that. It just makes sense to me. So anyway, okay. So there's the overlaps. Now let's start getting a little back to the variation. Terry, who do you have next?
I'm going to go with the Hulk, being Andre Gomez.
I am a little surprised. Okay, so Andre Gomez is the Hulk. Why is Andre Gomez the Hulk?
Because on occasion, he can be the most powerful member of the team, and he can be the one to get them out of trouble when they need to, but he's got a really, really bad temper, and sometimes he's a detriment to the team rather than a help to the team. It depends on the circumstance. So he's equally as helpful and harmful to the team at different times.
For the exact same reasons, it's funny, like, because the personalities of these characters, for the exact same reasons, I have the Hulk as Jordan Pickford, someone who seems to be almost entirely ruled by emotions. Can sit there and can be huge in games for you, just giving you everything you need, all the power you need, and then sometimes his emotions will cause you to take an L, and put you in worse trouble than you were in the beginning. Newcastle, there's an example of that.
I love that. That's just as fitting. It could really be either that, really, couldn't it?
Yeah. So, who do you got next?
Bernard is Doctor Strange.
So Bernard is Doctor Strange. Why is Bernard Doctor Strange?
Well, they're both magicians, let's be honest.
I like that a lot. That's clever.
They're both masters of their craft. They both are really important to the team, but are very understated. Like, you know, on the face of it, you don't realize how important they are. But Doctor Strange has been absolutely vital to the last two Avengers films. You know, like, how the story plays out, and yeah, I just don't think any more needs to be said other than both are magic at what they do.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I think that all that makes sense. I don't actually have a Doctor Strange on my list.
Do you have a Bernard?
I do.
Who's Bernard?
For me, and this is not having anything to do with height whatsoever, Bernard is Ant-Man.
It is. It so is.
Yeah, and it's mainly because of Bernard's ability to get in and explore tight spaces.
I've just realized as well, we've totally gone off the starting 11 because we've said Coleman. Or did he play? I think it was Zuma.
Well, I mean, it's the starting 11, you know? So it's really, I realize Coleman didn't start the previous match. However, he is our starting right back.
Oh, that's cool. I thought we were doing last game.
So, yeah, we don't have to worry about the minutiae, the hair-splitting details. We're good. So, Terry, who's your next Everton Avenger?
I'm going to go with Idrissa Garner-Gay as Iron Man.
Idrissa Garner-Gay as Iron Man. Why is Garner the Iron Man?
Because Iron Man says in the second Avengers film, I just build everything, pay for everything, organize everything. The whole team can't run without Iron Man. He facilitates everything. The Avengers are Iron Man's team. And I think, although he's not the leader, it's the same with Idrissa Gay. Without Idrissa Gay, none of the other players can do their stuff anywhere near as well. Iron Man is the glue that holds the Avengers together.
That's really good.
And I think Idrissa Gana is the glue that holds the Everton team together.
I have a different Iron Man. My Iron Man is someone who is flashy, like Tony Stark. It constantly seems like he's in the spotlight. There's video of him doing his thing all over the place, just like Iron Man. Doesn't seem to really hide from his celebrity. And is quite powerful. And this is one of the reasons why my Iron Man is Richarlison.
I knew it.
But I got to be honest, Derry, I really like your reasons for Ghana being Iron Man. I think that's really well thought out. So, who's next, man?
I'm going to go with Star-Lord. It's Yeri Mina.
Yeri Mina is Star-Lord. Now, he's not a starter, right?
No, but it's the it came to mind because they're not, you know, front and center members of either of the teams, and they've both got like a sort of silly, you know, attitude towards things. But when the chips are down, they've both they both played for the team themselves, but in a limited capacity compared to the others.
Yeah. Okay. I see that. Okay. I've got, for me, like Yeri Mina, if he's anybody, he would be, you know, Groot. You know, similar height, and often injured.
Yes, that's even better.
All right, so who's next for you, Terry?
Okay, I'm gonna go with Kurt Zuma is Black Panther.
Kurt Zuma is Black Panther
because he's super fast and super strong, and that's all I can think of.
Fast and strong, and that's all. I mean, that's a good reason.
And he comes from a very, very wealthy place. One being Chelsea, the other being Wakanda.
Oh, Terry, I like that a lot. Chelsea has Wakanda. I have a different Black Panther. My Black Panther is Idrissa Gueye. Yeah, I think Idrissa Gueye. The last time I watched him play, the commentator was comparing him to a big cat, the way he was just attacking the ball and constantly tackling everyone. And so immediately, just his athleticism, speed, aggression, power for his size, just immediately made me think of Black Panther. I think an argument for the same reasons you mentioned about Doctor Strange earlier, you could possibly make an argument for Doctor Strange also for the facial hair reasons. Who's next, man?
I'm going to say Michael Keane is Hawkeye.
Okay, so why?
The importance of each member to their respective team is understated, and it's only really noticed when they're not there.
Yeah,
like Hawkeye, whilst not being the most flashy of the Avengers, is important to the team on a sort of security and, like, you know, confidence level for the rest of the team. He's, you know, he's one of the weaker Avengers, but he's needed. He's crucial to the team. When things have been down, he's got them out of a hole. Like in the second film, takes them to his little farm out in nowhere for them to regroup. Michael made some last-ditch tackles, and the same thing when the opposition's been hitting the Everton defense hard.
That's good. My Hawkeye, I'm not sure if I like my reasons as much as I like your reasons, but I've got my Hawkeye is Luca Dean, mainly because I think either the last game, next or the next to last game, his crosses were just absolutely just precise. He's able to pick out men in the air with the ball, in between defenders. It's amazing, frankly. And his absolutely precision dead balls outside the box, the way he's just curving them perfectly into the corner. For me, he's not one of the loudest guys. He's more just an understated guy. He just kind of allows his play to speak for him. It just reminds me of Hawkeye a bit, you know? So, So who's next for you, Terry?
Richarlison is Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel is Richarlison. How do you have Mr. Pigeon Dance being Captain Marvel?
Because they're both sort of misunderstood, because they've both got sort of a sour sort of demeanor and like face, like facial, like resting face, but they're both the most powerful members of the whole team. Like Captain Marvel's the most powerful Avenger, and if there's any question about that, you need to see Endgame.
Okay, and I have to be honest, I have not seen Endgame or Captain Marvel yet, so I don't know a lot about Captain Marvel, frankly.
So she's super powerful, and Richarlison is the most effective, you know, forward player at the club. The only one who comes close to him is Sigurdsson. Same way, the only one who comes close to Captain Marvel is Thor. So it's sort of that super powerful, misunderstood because of a demeanor that is not accurate to their actual personality.
I want to see it. It's at the $3 theater locally, so I believe me and my sons may go watch that soon. I have no Captain Marvel on my team. Okay. Who do you have left, Terry? I feel like you don't have too many more left.
I'm gonna go with Pickford is Ant-Man.
You've got Jordan Pickford as Ant-Man. I'm curious to hear reasonings.
But sometimes he can be enormous, and sometimes he can be really small.
Oh, that's great.
He's got the potential to be a really powerful, really important member, but the lack of taking things seriously can sometimes lead to him being one of the lesser members of the team. And yeah, Ant-Man has been at times when he's huge, he could be really powerful, and sometimes there's lack of seriousness really hurts him, and that's, I think, applies to Pickford as well.
No, that's good. No, that's thoughtful. It's funny and thoughtful. The total package, Terry. Well done. So, Terry, you've got one more. One more starter.
Calvert-Lewin.
Okay.
Calvert-Lewin is War Machine.
And why do you have DCL as War Machine?
Because they're both effective, they're both strong, but they sort of don't get the credit they deserve because focus is pulled a little bit away by other players. Like, you've got Richarlison as Iron Man, and yeah, I just think hard worker, powerful member of the Avengers, but doesn't get the limelight because of the other characters. Also very disciplined because he's in the army, very hard working.
I would say for the exact same reasons that you have DCL as War Machine, I have Kurt Zuma as my War Machine. Let's see here, who else? I think that's it for you, man. I've got two left, I believe. I've got Michael Keane as Falcon, mainly because he's like Seamus's right-hand man, or maybe we should say left-hand man. He's always right there beside him. So he's just like Captain America. He's always right there with Captain America, and that just makes sense. That adds up. It's proximity.
On your left.
I just watched that one, so I get that reference. I understand that reference.
He's literally on his left.
Yeah, he is. And additionally, I have, and so this is maybe my weirdest one, I have Andre Gomez as Black Widow, mainly because you don't really know where his allegiances lie, you know? You're not sure with him being on loan, where he's coming from, where he's going, what's going on with Andre Gomez. Is he a double agent? What's up? He's damn gorgeous. You know, so yeah, he's gorgeous.
That's great.
Really quick, Terry, who is Nick Fury? Silva, Bronze, Mashiri. Which one of those three?
Got to be Mashiri, hasn't he? He's the head man. No, Mashiri's more like Odin, isn't he? Like, he's the top guy. Nick Fury's Silver, because he manages the Avengers team. He doesn't manage everyone. Bronze would be who?
I don't know. Do you think Bronze might be like Doctor Strange or Adam Warlock or Captain Marvel? I don't know. I had trouble with this.
I'd say Fury is is Silva, though, because the Avengers team is managed by him, not anyone else.
I'm with you as Fury being Silva.
You've seen Doctor Strange, have you?
I have seen Doctor Strange, yeah. I liked it a lot, actually.
I liked it a lot. I think Brands is the ancient one. Knows all, and is wiser than everyone else.
And now every time I see Marcel Bronze, I'm going to think about Tilda Swinton. there could be worse mental correlations, just saying. Oh yeah, and one other thing, just because we have to do it. Terry, who's Thanos?
Mike Riley, the head of the referees. or name a big referee. Jürgen Klopp, whatever, fuck the referees. Jürgen Klopp is Thanos because they're the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. Are we the baddies? Yeah. I have Klopp as Thanos too. I couldn't think of him if anybody else is Thanos. You know, it just seemed perfect because Klopp is Thanos because he has this great plan to rule the universe that nearly worked.
Yes, that is brilliant.
You're so close.
Nearly, this thing nearly won.
It just seemed to make sense, you know.
Just stopped him, isn't it? And just like in real life, the Avengers stopped him.
Yeah, and they lost the league at Goodison. And there it is. Yeah. So that's the end of our geeky, extraordinarily geeky Everton Avengers pod segment. Thanks a lot for tolerating that one. But frankly, I had fun with this. Yeah. So this wraps up our big show. So thanks to everybody for listening. If you've been listening via podcast, please subscribe to the Top of Blues podcast. We'd really appreciate it. And if you're thinking, gosh, you know, I bet Jerry's probably really weird looking. Well, you know, you could find that out by watching our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's just called the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. It's like super easy to Google that. So check it out and subscribe. We'd really appreciate that. If you want more Terry, and goodness knows we all do, you can find Terry on the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. And check out his Twitter. He'll tell you when and where he's going to be there. There's like one more Liverpool Echo Fan Jury where you find him, and then there'll be like a little break for the preseason and whatnot. And also, if you want to see him in person, catch him in person, you're not going to be able to find that on Twitter, but maybe if you just walk out on the street, you'll see some Terry and give him a big old hug, and he'd appreciate it. Additionally, check out the Toffee Blues website if you haven't already. A lot of new stuff happening with the Toffee Blues website. It's pretty exciting what's happening, so check that out. Lots of content on there. So please, if you will, go there. Also, follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's all I got. No more plugging. Terry, thanks so much. It's great to talk to you, as always.
You too, man.
And we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. So, yeah. I guess we'll see you later, everybody. Have nice dreams of big old signings, perhaps a little more exciting than Jonas Lösel. But hey, it's a good start. So that's all we got. Thanks so much, and bye.